And we're holding on Kofiyud Beis Amud Beis at the beginning of the Gemara. So seven lines from the bottom. We had the Mishnah told us many different scenarios involving various permutations of Chershim and Pitchim in terms of their marriages, in terms of what happens when they're allowed and not allowed to get divorced, what happens as far as Yibum and Chalitza. So the Gemara is first going to deal with, now we always have throughout Shas, we have the famous trio of Cheresh, Shoti, V'Katan, that they are three people who have three types of people who all lack full das. So before we've learned about, so now let's consider. In our Mishnah, we said that, so our Mishnah talked about a Cheresh or a Chereshes getting married. On the other hand, we said that with a Shoti, so with Shoita, we didn't really deal in detail with the Shoita in the Mishnah, but we did mention that if the woman becomes a Shoita, then you're not supposed to divorce her, which we'll talk about that further on Kofiyud Gimel Amud Beis. And if he becomes a Shoita, then he's not able to give a get. But the implication seems to be that the Shoita doesn't get married in the first place, because we didn't mention throughout the Mishnah, whenever we're mentioning Cheresh, we never mentioned the Shoita. And as far as a Katan and a Katana, so a Katana, we've learned before, can get married, Doraisa, if her father accepts Kedushin on her behalf, Dirabanan otherwise. So let's say a Katan we don't really find. We've found that a Katan can do Yibum, but we don't really have, other than that, a concept of a Katan having Nisuin. So we're going to go through that now and discuss the contrasts, the similarities and the contrasts between these three, the Cheresh, the Shoita, and the Katan, in terms of the various dinim of marriage. So, Amar Rami Bachama, Maishna Cheresh v'Chereshes Takinu Lohu Rabbanu Nisuin. Why is it when it comes to a Cheresh or a Chereshes, a male or female Cheresh, that the Chachamim made a Takana that they should do Nisuin, even though they don't have data? Or Maishna the Shoita v'Shoita Deloy Takinu Lohu Rabbanu Nisuin. Versus when it comes to a shoita and a shoita, a male or female shoita, then the Chachamim did not establish a concept of nisuin for them. And we know that, not just because our Mishnah left them out, but because the Tanya, it says explicitly in a Braisa, shoita v'katan shenasu nashim u'mesu, if a shoita or a katan get married, and marry wives, u'mesu, and then they die, nishasen turas mina chalitzu mina yibum, then their wives are potter from chalitzu yibum because they weren't considered married. So what's the difference? And the answer is, cheresh v'cheresh is tekaim v'takanta d'rabbanon, because with a cheresh and a cheresh, it's true that they don't have das. But in general, they're normal people. They can get along one with another. So therefore, once a cheresh is married, whether to another cheresh, whether to a pikachas, vice versa, a cheresh, whether to another cheresh or to a pikeach, either way, the marriage will tend to endure. It's not going to be in that regard any different than a regular marriage where it has a good chance of lasting. So therefore, takinu lohu rabbanu nisuin. So therefore, the Chachamim made a takana that there should be nisuin between them. But shoita v'shoita deloy taima takanta d'rabbanan. But when it comes to a shoita or a shoita, the takana, if the Chachamim were to be misaken that they should get married, it wouldn't really last anyway. They wouldn't stay married for very long. The expression is a person can't live together in one basket with a snake. So we don't mean, in other words, it's not like the shoita or the shoita is malicious. But the point is they're unpredictable. And therefore, so nobody is going to be able to live with them for very long, because at any time they could demonstrate their craziness, and therefore such a marriage is not really going to endure very long anyway. So therefore, lo takinu rabbanan nisuin, so the Chachamim did not bother making a takana of nisuin. So if you have, as we had in our Mishnah, where they got married when they were normal, and afterwards she becomes a shoita, or afterwards he becomes a shoita, then you have issues, because the fact is that their marriage to begin with was daraisa, and there's no changing that. But to begin with, to say that a shoita or a shoita should be getting married, the Chachamim didn't bother doing that, because they figured it's not really going to last for very long anyway. There are, of course, different degrees of shoita and shoita for that regard. You have the Gemara in Chagiga gives us a definition of a shoita, And there's been this kind of thing has exercised post him throughout the generations, figuring out the exact parameters of what's considered a shoita or a shoita for these purposes when they actually can't give a get. And that could create a problem because, again, you can have cases of where the wife or even the husband sometimes becomes an aguna or an ogun because they're unable to get divorced. So when do we say that they really are a shoita versus when do we say that not, that they may have periods of lucidity and then during those times maybe they can get divorced. So that kind of thing gets quite complicated. Anyway, continues the Gemara. So umayshna katan dolei takinu rabbanon nisuin v'cheresh takinu le rabbanon nisuin. Okay, now let's turn to the katan. How come a katan the chachamim didn't set up a concept that he should get married as a katan, whereas a cheresh they did? And the answer is cheresh dolei also the klan nisuin, because if the chachamim didn't establish a concept of nisuin for a cheresh, they would very likely never get married. After all, cheresh most of the time is going to remain a cheresh for life, and therefore the problem is so that he's not going to be able to get married. He's not going to be able to do a period of rivia. Takinu rabbanu nisuin. So the chachamim set up a concept of nisuin. We learned over there in the Masechta about the importance of pruvu. For a man, it's an actual chiyuv. Okay, for a cheresh, he's not chayiv mitzvah, so it's not technically a chiyuv for him. But still, we also learned over there there's a pasuk loy toyu bra lo sheves yitzara. That even for those who, for example, we said women are not chayiv and pruvu, but there still is a concept of Bosheves Yitzara, that Hashem created the world to be settled and established and populated. And there's also the practical matter we said there that, for example, a person wants to have kids to help support them in their old age. So you have to have somehow that the poor guy is going to be able to have children. And therefore, the Chachamim said, since otherwise he would remain unmarried for the rest of his life, let's set him up a marriage to Rabbanan. Cotton to Ossi, the Kalan Nisuin. A cotton, you don't need that. In a few years, he's going to be a gadol anyway. He'll be able to get married in the regular way. Therefore, lo takinu rabbanon nisuin. So the Chachamim didn't find it necessary to make a takana of nisuin for him. Right now, anyway, he's anyway below the age where he's able to father children anyway. But even if he is able to father children at this age, fine, he can wait a couple of years and get married then. Okay, well, then the question becomes, well, then what about a ketana? She's eventually going to grow up also. And still we said in the previous perek that the Chachamim set up nisuin for her, aside from, we're not even dealing with the fact that the Torah sets up nisuin for her, namely that the father can accept kedushin on her behalf. We're talking about even that her mother or her brothers or whoever can accept kedushin on her behalf, and we said in the previous perek, then you have the whole takana of miyun. So why didn't the chachamim just say okay, you know, if she's a ketana and her father's dead, then let her wait till she's a gdola and get married? And the answer is hasam shalay yinogua minigeth. The reason the chachamim did that was just because in between people might treat her as hefter. If she doesn't get married, there's nobody available to watch her, and therefore so people are going to be noyig minig hefter. They're going to seduce her into znus. And with a boy, you don't have that issue. So therefore the chacham didn't have a reason to make a takana of marriage for a boy, but they did for a girl. Incidentally, by the way, there is in this connection, there is a big machlokas rishonim, which we probably should have touched on in the previous perek, on the question of, is there even such a thing as kiddushin for a ketana anyway? There is actually an opinion of one of the, of a rishon, there is actually an opinion of a rishon, Rabbi Yehuda ben Barzilai, also called Rabbi Yehuda al-Bargoloni, who hold, he was in about a generation or two after the Rif and a generation or so before the Rambam. Anyway, he holds that there's no such thing as kiddushin for a ketana, only nisuin. And then you have other Rishonim, the Rif and other Rishonim disagree. We see in the previous parak, we talked many times about kiddushin. And the Ramban talks about maybe a compromise that maybe there's a difference between her accepting kiddushin for herself, which wouldn't work when she's a ketana, versus her mother or her brothers accepting it on her behalf, which would work. Next, umayshna ketana demamana umayshna cherches doloy mamana. Now let's turn to, okay, so once we say that both a ketana and a chershes can get married to Rabbanan, now we learned in the previous perek that a ketana can do miyun. She can at any point during the marriage say, well, not at any point, at any point until she becomes a gdola. She can say, I want out, efshi, and that's it. The marriage is over as if it never existed. But we don't find that by a chershes. Why not? And the reason is, the reason is because if you allowed that to a chershes, then people wouldn't marry her in the first place. Now, why is that? So Rashi says, because after all, with a chershes, there's no time limit. She could be many, many years from now, after you get married, you could still have that she's a chershes, because again, usually a chershes is a condition for life. So he never knows. So a person may figure, why should I bother marrying the chershes? And I'm going to be putting financial and emotional and emotional and whatever resources into the marriage when any day she could just do miyun and walk out. With a ketana, he's going to figure, you know what, after all, it's only a few years. So I'm marrying her, let's say now when she's 10. So I have 2 years. Okay, so during those 2 years, I have to make sure to make her to keep her happy all the time so she doesn't do miyun. But after that, I don't have much to worry about. With a chershes, there's no end point for it. So therefore, he might not want to marry her in the first place if there's a possibility of miyun. The Rashba points out another point as well. After all, the chershes has a handicap. So a person is more likely to say to himself, why should I even bother marrying her with a handicap when, again, there's the chance of miyun? At least with a ketana, there's no particular handicap. She's a ketana, fine. But since the Chachamim wanted to encourage that there should be possible marriage for a cheresh and a chereshes, like we said, because we want them to be able to have children, and after all, their marriage will generally endure as much as a normal person's. Therefore, the Chachamim did not make a takana of miyun for a chershes in order to give people more of an incentive to marry. Okay, the next question is, umayshna ketana de achla b'truma, umayshna chershes de loy achla b'truma. Now, let's consider, when a ketana marries a kohen, a marriage de rabbanon, that is, then she's able to eat truma de rabbanon, versus a chershes is not able to eat even truma dirabanan when she's married to a kohen. Why not? And we know that a chershes married to a kohen cannot eat truma, whereas a ketana cannot, because the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Adius. So in our Mishnah, Kufyud Beis Amud Beis, we had Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah saying Adius about that a chershes can be divorced with a get. We brought that in connection with the opinion of Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, who was arguing that a chershes might not be able to be divorced, as we'll talk about on Amud Beis. In fact, Tosfos says that some people had the girsa in our Mishnah, the same as we're quoted here in the Gemara from the Mishnah in Adius. But Tosfos says, no, we're in the Mishnah, we just quoted the part that was relevant to our Mishnah. Here in the Gemara, we're quoting the other half of the Mishnah. So, hey, Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah, ala chershes she siyavia, that a chershes who was married off by her father. Now, she was married off by her father as a ketana. So, from the point of view of that she was married off by her father, makes it daraisa. But on the other hand, she's a chershes. So she yotze beget. So he said that she can be divorced with a get, which that part we quoted in the Mishnah. And then he continues, Val Katana Bas Yisrael, Shinisis Lakoyan, Shaychelos Betruma. He also gave Eidos about a Katana, a Bas Yisrael, who was married to a Koyan, that she can eat Truma, Truma Dirabanan, that is. Because again, if she was married by her father, it would be Nisuin Gmurim, but because she was married off by her mother, then it's only a Nisuin Dirabanan. And therefore, so as we learned earlier in the Masechta, then therefore she can only eat Truma Dirabanan. But the point is, Ve'ilu Chershes Lo Yachla. Now the point is that Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah seems to be saying that a Chershes does not eat Truma. Now, how do you infer that from the Mishnah? So Rashi says, because first he's talking about a Chershes, then he switches from talking about a Chershes to talking about a Ketana. Otherwise, he could have said, also a chershes who gets married on her own, she'echelos b'truma, that she can eat truma, and he doesn't say that. Tosfos says it a little bit differently, that it could have said in the sefer, he could have said both. A chershes or a ketana are able to eat truma. The fact that he doesn't implies that the chershes can eat truma. Well, why not? If the ketana, whose marriage is dirabanan, can eat truma, why can't the chershes, whose marriage is also dirabanan? Interesting side point, by the way, worth mentioning in this regard is the Yerushalmi tells us this whole thing of Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgoda talking about Achershis, he had, so to speak, a personal stake in it. There's a Yerushalmi that says that he had two sons who themselves were Chershim. However, it also goes on to say that they became distinguished Talmid Chachamim, and in fact, it says that all Taharis in Yerushalayim were prepared under their supervision. So even though they were Chershim and they lacked full das, it says they were still able to supervise other people preparing Taharis and I guess to signal to them what's Talmid and what's Tahar and whatever. We also find, by the way, Gemara and Chagiga that says that two grandsons of his were mute. And they used to come to Rebbe's Beis Medrash and sit there listening to his Torah, even though they couldn't speak. Eventually, Rebbe davened for them to be healed. And when they were healed, the Gemara tells us, it turns out that they knew tremendous amounts of Torah from all those years sitting and learning and listening in the Beis Medrash. So Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgoda, then, in a certain sense, has a certain close relationship with this whole concept of Chershim and Ilmim and handicaps like that. Anyway, so the question again is, why a Chershis married to a Kohen can't eat Truma, whereas a Ketana married to a Kohen could eat at least Truma Dirabana. And the reason is, Gzera Shemiyachu Cheresh B'Chershis. The reason is, because we make a Gzera, what if the husband is a Cheresh? Now, if the Cheresh herself is married to a Pikeach, to a normal Kohen, then we can, that So this is not the complete answer yet. We're sort of in the middle of the answer, but the Gemara sort of interjects with a question on that. But right now, what we're starting to say is that if he was a Cheresh and she's a Chereshis, then there would be a problem with her eating Truma, because then the marriage doesn't really exist at all on a Daraisa level, because a Cheresh doesn't have the ability to do Kiddushin in a normal way. He can only do Kiddushin with Remiza, only with signaling. So the Gemara says, Valechu. So what's the problem? It doesn't matter whether her husband is a Pikeach or a Cheresh. Either way, if she's a Chereshis and she eats Truma when she's not supposed to, Katan Oichon Nevelasu. Maximum is, it's equivalent to the case of a Katan eating Nevelas, which we're going to have a sugya about that tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that if a Katan is doing Averis on their own, that we're not allowed to give it to them, fine. But if a Katan does things on their own that they're not supposed to do, then we don't necessarily have to, stop them, because after all, a katan is not chayiv mitzvahs. We'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow. So let's say a chereshis is married to a cheresh. What's the difference? So we're saying that his marriage to her doesn't have the strength to make her eat truma. But so what if she's eating truma, and when she's also two, then she's not chayiv in mitzvahs anyway. So what's the big deal? So the answer is fine, but gzeira shemiyachu cheresh b'pikachas. Okay, but what happens if the husband is a Cheresh and the wife is a Pikachas? Now, she's a Pikachas, so therefore, she being a Zora is also to eat Truma, and she would actually be punishable with Misibidei Shemayim for it. Now the problem is that, so because of that, the Chachamim made a Gzera, so it's kind of actually a two-step process, Rashi explains. First, what we do is, now what it is, we're not going to so easily confuse a cheresh marrying a pikachas with a pikeach marrying a cheresh. Such things, it's going to be clear that there's a distinction between them. And Rishonim explained that the reason is because people are going to realize, like the pikeach, the husband, the pikeach, kind of has the upper hand in the marriage, he being the husband and he being a pikeach. But what it is kind of a two-step process. When she's a cheresh, married to a cheresh, that might easily be confused with when she's married to a pikeach, and then in turn, or the other way around. If she's married, if a chereshis is married to a cheresh, then she might be confused with the case which is married to a pikeach, and then in turn, then there might be a further confusion between a cheresh married to a pikeachas with a cheresh married to a chereshis. So you have one of those cases involves a pikeach. A pikachas who's not allowed to eat truma and who is punishable for it because she's chayiv mitzvahs, who's married to a cheresh, where his marriage to her is only darabanan, and therefore we're making a blanket statement over here that we're not allowing any eating of truma when there's a cheresh involved on either side of the marriage, even though it's true in some of those cases we would have less to worry about because she's a chereshis. And therefore, whatever she does, she's not really chayiv in mitzvahs anyway. Nevertheless, in order to avoid the problem of a cheresh b'pikachas, then therefore we ban all of them. So it almost sounds like a gzeira, but But the Ritva explains, this is one of those examples where we would say kula chod gzeri. It's all one big gzera that anytime there's chershus involved, we're not having them eat truma. So then the cheresh pikachas nami leichel with truma derabanan. Okay, so what if she's a pikachas? Let her at least be able to eat truma derabanan. Her marriage to the cheresh is derabanan, so she should be able to eat truma derabanan, same as a ktana. And the reason is zeda jama also leichel with truma deraisa, because he might come to give her truma, which is deraisa, and as a zara and as a gzoila, she's not able to do that. Whereas again with a ktana, so with a ktana we have less of a problem with that, because. So Rashi explains the reason is, given that a katan, as we said before, has no nisuin anyway, so there's less of a concern that people are going to confuse a katana married to a gadol with a gdola married to a katan, because a katan doesn't get married anyway, so therefore there was less, so we're saying a cheresh or a chereshus can both get married, and there's the possibility that a cheresh may marry a pikachas, and because of that, we ban the wife from eating truma in all such cases involving a cheresh. Whereas with a katana, you don't have that issue because a katan is not getting married anyway. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because after all, we do find that the Gemara says elsewhere that we learned earlier in the Masechta actually, that a father should marry off his children somoch lepirkon, not long before they reach the age of gadlus. So in that case, a katan is getting married. So rather, Tosfos says the reason is because it's only a temporary thing. It's not really going to last that long before she becomes a gdola, and therefore the chacham didn't find it necessary to ban her from eating truma for that short amount of time. So in other words, if a gdola does marry a katan, it's only going to be a very short amount of time before he's a gadol, and then therefore, during that short amount of time, we don't have to be so concerned that he might give her truma, which is also to her. Okay, the Rashba counters Tosfos's proof that when it says samoch lepirkon, he says doesn't mean shortly before they become bar or bas mitzvah, means shortly after. So in that case, then Tanim are getting married anyway, like Rashba says. The Rashba says that. Okay, onward. Fine. So next, let's talk about another point that you have a difference between a ketana and a cherches. Or maishna ketana de isla ksuba, or maishna cherches de lesla ksuba. Why is it that a ketana gets a ksuba, the 100 or 200 zuz, as the case may be, and a cherches does not, which we're going to learn in a couple of lines how we know that a cherches doesn't. So again, the answer is, like before, DMK and Mimni, Yvloy Nasvila, for the same reason as we said at the top of the Amud, because then people are not going to want to marry a cherches in the first place, if they know they have to put money on the line for a ksuba. So again, like Rashi said, because it's an ongoing thing, she's going to be a cherches for life, whereas a ketana is only a temporary thing, because the cherches to begin with has a physical defect that makes her less attractive as a wife in the first place. So therefore, the chachamim wanted to give the husband more of an incentive to marry her again, so the cherches doesn't remain unmarried for life. Okay, so ketana menolam de isla ksuba. So you're telling me the premise of the question is that a ketana has a ksuba. Where are you getting that from? So detanan, we learn in a Mishnah. Hamama enes, a girl who does miyun, as we learned in the previous perek, vashnia, or if she was a shnia la'erva to her husband, we learned back in the second perek of Amasechta about the various shnias, the various cases where you have the arayas deraisa, and then you have extensions of those derabanan. Slightly less close relatives, but Ilonis, or if the girl is an Ilonis, Ein Lahen Ksuba, and we're talking about when he married her, he didn't know that she was an Ilonis. So Ein Lahen Ksuba, so none of them have a Ksuba. In the case of the Mama Enes, because it's not his fault that she's getting divorced, she's the one who wants out of the marriage, so therefore we don't make him pay a Ksuba. In the case of the shnia, it's a penalty. It's a knas to rabbanon because they shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. And in the case of the Ilonis, the reason is because it's mekach tos, because he would have never married her. And if he had known that she was an Ilonis,
what's the penalty for him?
The penalty for him for a shnia. So I mean, first of all, he can get makas maudus for it. But anyway.
That's a pretty big
count. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So none of them have a ksuba. Avo yotze beget, but all of them have to be divorced with a get, because after all, the marriage did exist. So Mama Enes, okay, the marriage only existed on a Rabbanon level. Well, so Mama Enes obviously doesn't need a get, but a shneir, an ilonis, needs to have a get, because after all, the kedushin were toifus on a daraisa level. By the way, with the ilonis, the brings in Shulchan Aruch based on the Rambam, based in turn on Gemaras, on relevant Gemaras, that she doesn't get the ikuk ksuba, but if there was toisvus ksuba, if he had set up to begin with that he's going to pay her extra, as we commonly have in ksubas nowadays, then that he does have to pay her, because that's something that he accepted on himself voluntarily. Uktana yeshlok, so uktana yeshlok ksuba, so therefore, we see that uktana has a ksuba, because only if she does miun are we saying that she doesn't have a ksuba. But we see, therefore, that uktana does have. Now, cherushes menolim deles la ksuba. What about, how do we know that a cherushes doesn't get a ksuba? So, detanya, cherush v'shoyte shenosu pichos, if a cherush or shoyte marry normal women, now we said before that Chachamim did not set up a takana of marriage for shoyte, but nevertheless, if he went and married one, then even if later on the cherush gets opened up and he's able to hear or speak, or the shoyta becomes normal, nevertheless, their wives have no claim against them, because their original kedushin was based, they didn't have das. So why don't we say, the Gemara is going to deal with in a few lines, why don't we say, by the same token, that we should establish a ksuba for the wife of a cheresh so that she'll have an incentive to marry him. We'll get back to that in a few lines, but the point is that when he marries her, he doesn't have das, so therefore he's not responsible for a ksuba. So if at that point he dies or divorces her, then there's no ksuba. Rotsu l'kaiman, if they want to stay married to their wives, yesh lahem ksuba, then they have a ksuba, because you're not allowed to remain unmarried without a ksuba. You're not allowed to remain married, I should say, without a ksuba. So we see that a cheresh, and the Braisa continues, upikeach shenasa cheresh, conversely, if a pikeach marries a cheresh oy shoyta, afilo kosev lameya mona, so even if he wrote out a ksuba of 100 mona, which is far beyond what a normal ksuba is, because a normal ksuba is 200 zuz for a besula, and 100 zuz, 1 mona for a ba'ula. So here he wrote a ksuba of 100 zuz, of 100 mona, ksubasa kayemes, then even though she's a cheushes or a shoita, nevertheless the ksuba is still in effect, because he wanted to damage his property. He was willing to, this is like we just said about Tosfos Ksuba for an Ilonis, he voluntarily accepted that responsibility on himself and on his estate. So therefore, fine, we can hold him to that. But the point is, time of the Rotza, we're saying only because he wants to write out such a large ksuba, then we hold him to it. Holo rotza ema, implying if he didn't specifically want to, he's just marrying and doing the regular ksuba, then she doesn't have. So why not? And again, the answer is like we said before, the imkain mimni evilo nasvila. Because if you make him have to pay a ksuba for a cherushes, then people are not going to want to marry her in the first place. And again, the chachamim wanted to give incentives that a person should marry a cherushes. Now, So in other words, pikeach marries a cherushes. We're saying that only if he wrote out a toisvus ksuba, then he has to pay her. But ikuk ksuba, he does not. And the reason is because we want to give him a financial incentive, knowing that he can marry her without paying a ksuba, makes him more likely to marry her. So I don't know if he writes a pashtus, so we need to write a ksuba at all. The point of a ksuba is to, Tosfos points out, now another reason for the ksuba is, the basic reason for the ksuba in the first place is shaloi tehe kala ba'ein avoytzia. You don't want that it should be so easy for him to divorce her. So why aren't we concerned about that over here? So Tosfos just says, loi choshu chachamim lakach, the chachamim were not concerned about that. Tosfos did not explain why. The Rashba explains like this, because given that a cheresh, so if let's start with the case where the husband is a cheresh, given that he lacks das, there's less of a likelihood that he's going to be so quick to divorce his wife anyway. So therefore, it's less likely, and therefore there's less of a concern with that. And similarly, if she's a cherushes, when we say shloite kala ba'ein avoytzia, what we mean is also, we don't want that she's going to constantly be on pins and needles. What happens if at some point my husband doesn't like me anymore, and he being he being a, and after all, given that this is before Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, he could divorce me against my will. So he may just wake up one morning, decide he wants to divorce me, and that's it, I'm out. So therefore, like, she's always on tenterhooks about that. But if she's a Cherushis, again, she lacks complete das. So therefore, she's not going through life thinking that way. And therefore, if there's no ksuba, then it doesn't really impair their marriage anyway. Okay. So the question is, Yehochi pekachas v'cheresh liskan l'ksuba. So in that case, then why isn't it reciprocal? Why don't we say that if a cheresh marries pekachas, then she should have a ksuba? V'imken mimni v'loy nasvi. After all, don't we want to give the women an incentive to marry the male cherishim as well? And the answer is no, because as the Gemara says in a number of places, yosim isha ish roitza lisa isha roitza lehinasi. Because a man, as much as a man wants to get married, even more so a woman wants to be married. And the Gemara expresses it in some places, with the expression that a woman's mentality is tabla mesav tandu mila mesav armalu, better that she would live together with somebody else than to live alone. So for the women, we don't need to give them that extra incentive to marry a cheresh. If a cheresh is the only available shidduch for them, then they'll take it. As opposed to a man, if the only available shidduch is a cheresh and he has to pay her a ksuba like anybody else, he's less likely to. So they'll say, I'll just stay unmarried for the time being. I can support myself. I can protect myself, etc. So therefore, we want to give him that extra incentive, that extra push to go ahead and marry a cherishes, and him not having to pay a ksuba is such an incentive. Okay, the Gemara tells, though, how who cheresh to have a b'shiva vuse did Rav Malkiyo. There was a cheresh who lived in Rav Malkiyo's neighborhood. And Tosfos adds that Rav Malkiyo was actually the guardian of his property, the apotropos of his property. B'chlal, we have in Gemara, in Halacha, we have that Yisoymim, for example, are wards of Beis Din. The expression for it is that Beis Din Aviyam Shor Yisoymim, that Beis Din serves in lieu of father for Yisoymim. And it's similar with other kinds of people like that who lack das, such as a cheresh. Generally speaking, the local Beis Din is responsible for them. So here, Rav Malkiyo was responsible. Was it as a private citizen? Was it because he's the head of the Beis Din? One way or the other, it doesn't matter. Anyway, in Sive Itza, so Rav Malkiyo arranged a shidduch for the Scheresh, and he wrote out a ksuba of 400 zuz from that would be payable from the Cheresh as Mechosin. Now, we just said there's generally not a ksuba. But Amar Rava man chakin could Rav Malkiyo de gavri rabbi. Who is so wise as Rav Malkiyo? He's a great person. He realized that this is an exception to the usual rule. Kasaba, because Rav Malkiyo figured either rotz a shivcha l'shamshay. After all, if the cheresh wanted to have a maid servant to serve him, to clean and cook and whatever around the house, milo zabninan lo, wouldn't we as his guardians be responsible to go and take some of his property and buy him one? The guardians always have to look out for the best interests of the ward. So how much more so here? We have both factors. Number one, he gets a shivcha l'shamshay, because after all, a woman does those kinds of things around the house, and that he's actually married, that he's able now to do period of rivia as well. Therefore, Rav Malkiyo figured if this is an example where the only way the cheresh is going to be able to get married is by providing a ksuba, and not only a regular ksuba, but even one double the normal value, 400 instead of 200 zuz, then that's what you have to do. And that's how it is. So in general, we say that a cheresh married to a pekachas, there's no ksuba. However, if the dayanim figure that the only way we're gonna get this cheresh married is the women in this place are more picky, and they're not going to say we'll just take any husband that comes along. They're only going to marry him only if they have an incentive. Then yes, we will provide that incentive, and we will give them a ksuba. Okay. So that covers. So now we've covered the various things why it is that there are differences in marriage and in the powers of marriage between a cheresh and a shoita and a kot. New discussion. We're saying in the Mishnah that the marriage of a cheresh is only dirabban. Suppose a person were to have relations with this wife of the cheresh, he wouldn't be chayev an oshem tolu. Meaning, so an oshem tolu, the classic example is, let's say that so a person does an avera where if he knows he did it, he would be chayev achatas. So if he's not sure whether he did it, then he brings an oshem tolui, and that covers him and that saves him from punishment from Hashem until we. If he ever finds out that he actually did it, then he's going to bring a chatas. Meanwhile, it shields him from punishment. So now what we're saying is, Reb Chiya Ba'ashi is telling us in Shmuel's name, you shouldn't think that the marriage of the cheresh to his wife is a suffix, that it's a suffix whether he has das or not, and in that case, the suffix whether she's an ashes ish. No, it's a vadai that he has no kinyan in that Torah, and therefore there'd be no oshem tolui for having relations with her. So the Gemara says lema messiahle. Well, can we say that we can support Shmuel from the following Mishnah? The first Mishnah of Truma says, Chamisha lo yitremu. There are five kinds of people who cannot give Truma. Vim tomu ain't Trumas and Truma. And if they did, it's not valid. Ve'elohen, cheresh shot of a cotton. Va'turim ashena shaloi. The fourth one is somebody who gives Truma from what's not his without permission. And the fifth one is Va'ovit Kacham, Shatarim Shah Yisrael. After the Bishrus Yisrael, if a goy takes Truma from a Jew's produce, even if the Jew gave him permission, ain't Trumas yit Truma, then it's still not valid Truma. Now, why is that? We learn from a pasuk in this week's parasha, actually, where it says, "Kain torimu gam atim trumas Hashem," that the Levim are told about the mitzvah of trumas meiser. So we learn from that that it means that you, aside that you yourself can give truma or trumas meiser, you can delegate it to somebody else. This is where we learn the concept of shlichus, but it has to be gam atim. They have to be similar to you. Now you are a ben das, therefore your shliach has to be a ben das. So that cuts out the cheresh shot of a cotton. You give it with your own consent. Therefore, a person who does it has to be with your consent. So that's why if he does without your shus, then it doesn't work. And gam atim, you are bnei bris, you are Jews. Therefore, your shliach has to be a Jew also, and therefore he can't be a goy. So that's why those five apostles. So that's why if those five give truma, then it's not in trumas and truma. Now the point is that if it was a matter of a suffix, then you have throughout Masechta Trumas, and we had examples of it earlier in our Masechta as well, where sometimes we would often say Truma v'yachsiv yitren. If it's a suffix or various cases like that, we would say what he originally gave is Truma and has to be given to the Kohen. However, then you have to take Truma again in order to cover it to be sure. So if we were to say that it was a suffix, whether a cheresh has das, then we would say if a cheresh takes truma, we would say truma v'yachsu v'yitrim. We would have said that it is true, what he gave is truma, and you have to give it to the kohen and has the kedusha of truma. But to be on the safe side, you have to take a ben das has to give truma again. The fact that we're not saying that, the fact that we're saying that it's not truma, period, ain't trumas and truma, implies that it's not even a matter of a suffix. We know he doesn't have das. So would that support what Shmuel is saying? But the Gemara says no, because not necessarily. Who do Amar could have a loss? You could say that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Lazar. Now it's a bit of an unusual thing. Usually the Gemara would rather say that an Amora holds like a Stam Mishnah. Here the Gemara is kind of doing the opposite and saying maybe he doesn't. Maybe he holds like Rabbi Lazar, who disagrees with that Stam Mishnah. There is actually in the back of the Gemara, there's Hagois Ben Aryeh. From actually the father of Yisrael Salanter, was a rav in various cities and in Litta, and he wrote notes on the Gemara. So he brings a different girsa over here. The Gemara is asking not lema messiahle, but what is Shmuel telling us? If we can derive it very clearly from the Mishnah, then Shmuel is not telling us any chiddush. And the answer is that Shmuel is telling us that he doesn't hold like that Mishnah. He holds like Rabbi Elazar. The Tanya, Rabbi Yitzchok Omer Mishum Rabbi Elazar, Trumas Cheresh Leitetz Lachulin Bnei Shu Safek. So if a cheresh gives truma, it doesn't go out and become chulin because it's a suffix. So Rabbi Elazar in fact holds that a cheresh, it is a suffix, whether he has das or not. Well then, according to Rabbi Elazar, so according to Rabbi Elazar, there are not five that im tromu and trumas and truma, only four. So Shmuel would be following that. So he's not necessarily agreeing with the Mishnah. So the question is, well, if Shmuel holds like Rabbi Elazar, then you should be chayiv and oshem tolui for having relations with his wife, because after all, it's a classic case of suffix. And the answer is, but in chaticha mishtei chatichas. The reason is because in order to be chayiv and oshem tolui, you have to have what's called ischazik isura. You know that there's an object to you which is osur, and you're not sure whether what you did involved that object or something else. Classic example is a person has two pieces of fat in front of him. One is chaylev. One is Shuman. He eats one of them. The other one is lost. and we don't know which one, he doesn't know which one he ate, then he brings an Oshem Talui in case the one he ate was Chayla. But it has to be that we know to begin with, one of them was also as Chayla. Here, to begin with, her own status is itself doubtful, whether she's married or not, whether the Cheresh Hadas or not, according to the Balazar. So therefore, it's not Ischazik Isura, and therefore that wouldn't be a case. That is why Shmuel is saying that you don't bring an Oshem Talui. Well, the question is, since when does Rabbi Elazar require chaticha m'shtei chatichas anyway? Sometimes they say, whatever, it's an animal where there's a suffix, whether it's a chayah or a behemah, and the Gemara discusses in Chulin and other places what it is exactly. Is it a hybrid between a chayah and a behemah, or is it a separate species with a chacham, weren't sure. Anyway, if it's a chayah, then it's chaylev is mutter to eat. If it's a behemah, then it's chaylev is aser. So chayav and achel by oshem talu. So Rabbi Elazar says that you would be chayav an oshem talu if you ate its chaylev. So he doesn't require a schazik yisura. You have one piece over here where it's not that you know that there's a piece here that's aser. You have a piece here which you don't know about the halachic status of the animal, whether it's a chayah or a behemah, and Rabbi Elazar is still saying you need an oshem talu. So applying that then to the wife of a cheresh, if Rabbi Elazar is saying that a cheresh is a suffix whether he has das, therefore his wife is a suffix whether she's actually his wife, then according to that logic, you should be chayv in an oshem talu. And the answer is Shmuel suffix. Rabbi Elazar b'chado, polagalei b'chado. The answer is that Shmuel agrees with Rabbi Elazar on one detail and disagrees with him on another. He agrees with Rabbi Elazar that the cheresh is a suffix. He disagrees on the concept of chaticha mishtei chatichas. He would say you need chaticha mishtei chatichas to be chayiv in an oshem talui, and Rabbi Elazar holds that you don't. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar would say there's no oshem talui, and so therefore, Rabbi Elazar would say there is an oshem talui. Shmuel would say there's not. The Ikka da Amri Amr Abchir Ba'ashi Amr Shmuel. Another version of the discussion is that Abchir Ba'ashi says in the name of Shmuel the opposite. That on the contrary, you would be chayiv in Oshem Talui for having relations with her. And the Gemara asks Meisvi in that case, then the Mishnah in Truma seems to be a contradiction to that. Chamisha lo yitzremu, where we said that Cheresh's Truma is not Truma at all, implying that there's no suffix. No suffix means no Oshem Talui. And the answer is Sava like Rabbi Elazar. The answer is we would answer like we did before, that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Elazar, that in fact it is suffix. Now, Barim Ashi. Now that brings Rabbi Ashi to a question. My time at Rabbi Elazar. What is Rabbi Elazar's reason himself? We're saying that Rabbi Elazar says the Cheresh is a suffix. But within the suffix itself, there can be two possibilities. Is it mifshit pshitalei de cheresh daitik plishtahu? Is it that he knows for a fact that a cheresh has a weak kind of das? He doesn't fully understand things. Umiyum esapgalei idaitit silusa, ilav daitit silusa. So the question is, how clear is his das? So he may not understand things as well as other people. And in fact, the Mitzvah says the basic idea is you speak to a cheresh and he looks over there at you like he doesn't know what you're saying because he can't understand, he can't hear you. He can't hear you and he can't speak to answer back to you. That's why we say that he doesn't have das. So is it that he doesn't understand like most people, but the little amount of das that he has, is it clear or not? So do we say when he actually focuses on something, then he can actually accomplish it? But that would be throughout his life. So it's always one level of das. It's just the question that it's just we're saying that level of das itself is kind of muddy. That's the suffix. Whether that incomplete das that he has is clear or not. But it's always the same. Or maybe Rabbi Elazar takes the view. We know that the das of a cheresh is always a weak das that he doesn't fully understand things, and it's not so clear in the sense that even if he focuses on something, he's not really going to be able to understand it. But we could say that maybe sometimes his brain works better than others. Maybe sometimes his das is clearer. And therefore, at the time of Kiddushin, he might have been of sound mind. So the Gemara says, "L'mayin nafka mina." Okay, so what's the practical difference between these two possibilities? And the difference would be, "L'hotzi ishtei beget." The nafka mina would be, can he divorce his wife with a get? If you say that he always has the same level of das, and the suffix is only whether that das is clear or not, so then Kiddushin, Kach Gerushin, the same mental state that he was in at the time of Kiddushin, he'll be at the time of Gerushin, and therefore, as we said, the same way as he can accomplish the Kiddushin with Remiza, with signaling, the same way he can accomplish the Gerushin by signaling to the Sofer to write. Yeah, the i'amit itim cholim, the itim shoyte. But if you say that maybe sometimes his das is clearer than others, sometimes he's normal, sometimes not, kiddushi motzi mekadesh, then he can well do kiddushin because at that time he might be of sound mind, durushi le motzi mekadesh, but he wouldn't be able to do gerushin because at that time he might not be of sound mind. Mai, so what would be the answer according to Rabbi Elazar? And the answer is take. Now, since the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar anyway, the halacha is like the chachamim, that a cheresh is a suffix, it's a vadai, therefore it's a the taker is not really negeya la halacha, because either way the halacha is like the chachamim, and therefore yes, a cheresh who's machnes b'remiza can be motzi b'remiza. He marries his wife with remiza, so he can divorce her with remiza as well. If he became a cheresh later on in the marriage, then you have a different issue. Then that's what the Mishnah had said that he can't, or Mishnah had said that he can't divorce her, because again he has to be a ben das to do that, and he doesn't have das now.
In the opposite way also, that when the time of Kedushin his mind was not clear, and the time of Gerushin his mind was...
Well, of course, but we don't know that. According to Rabbi Elazar, it would always be a suffix. We can't, it's hard to evaluate the person's mental state and know at what points he's cholim and at what points he's shoyte. You have a similar thing, by the way, as far as people who are non-Gerushim as well. For example, in Gittin, it talks about Misha Ochse Kudiyakus. You have cases where a person is, where a person goes through fits of insanity. You have to, or for example, you also have a case, for example, a person has epilepsy or whatever, you have to be very careful with getting with such a person, because you have to make 100% sure that he's completely of sound mind when he's giving instructions to have to get written and delivered. Again, these kinds of things take up many, many pages in many svarim of Shilos Atrovas, dealing with the ins and outs of what we say about these kinds of things, as far as a shoita, as far as a cheresh, as far as other such things, yeah. Okay, the Mishnah had said nishtakas v'cholo. The Mishnah had said that if the woman becomes a shoita during the marriage, then we said the husband is not allowed to divorce her. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, dvar Torah shoita miskareches. Really, mina Torah, you wouldn't be able to divorce her. Midi dehabiyat pikachas baal kocha. After all, a pikachas you can divorce against her will, again, until cherem de'aben geshim. So therefore, so a shoita is no different. She doesn't have das, big deal. It doesn't matter. She doesn't need das to receive a get. So why did the Chachamim say that she's not Megurashis? Because again, like we said before about the Ketana, we don't want people to treat her Hefker. She doesn't know how to watch herself. So therefore, she's going to be easily seduced or easily whatever, and she's going to wind up on the streets, basically. So the Gemara says, hey, she done. But what's the scenario over here that you're saying that midaraisa she could be divorced, but midirabanan not? Ilema diyadas lishma gita viyadas lishma atzma. If she knows how to watch her get, she knows that this is an object that I have to hold on to, and she doesn't just lose it. One of the definitions of a shota, after all, is ma'abed tol mashanoistim, that they lose or they destroy everything they're given. So if she knows how to watch the get and knows that it's something important to hold on to, viyadas lishma atzma, and she also has enough intelligence to know to watch herself against Znus, Minagiba Minak Hefker, well then people are not going to be treating her Hefker. So what's the problem with divorcing her? If you're telling me that she has so little understanding, she's such a shaita that she can't even guard her own get, she doesn't even know what a get is to hold on to it, or herself, well, what do you mean? Then what do you mean that Minatoda, you'd be able to divorce her? After all, we learn in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai that when the pasuk says about a get, the nosan v'yoda, he places it in her hand, means that it only works mishiyesh le'yad le'garash atzma. It works only if she has a yad, if she has the ability to receive things, then to send herself away. In other words, that she knows once she's received the get, she has to leave. Yotzazusha in the yad legarish atzma, as opposed to a shoita who doesn't know how to watch the get, where then she doesn't have a yad to receive her own get. But Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, and the Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel learns it in a different way. They agree with the din, but they learn it from a different pasuk, where it says, in the same pasuk says, "Mishulchah mibeisoi," he sends her away from his house, implying mishum shalcha ve'en chazeres, that it applies only when he sends her away and she doesn't return. She knows that she's out. as opposed to a shoita, where even if you send her away, she's going to return, because it actually says she came in a shoita, chain and bosha. A shoita doesn't feel a concept of busha, so they're not going to have any qualms about returning. You're going to tell them again and again, get out of here. It's not going to make a difference to them. So therefore, so if a shoita is not able to guard her get or herself, then even daraisa divorce shouldn't be effective. So what are you telling me, that there's a case where daraisa would be effective, but drabbanon not? And the answer is loy tzricha the adas lishma gita ve'ni adas lishma atzma. We're talking about where she's in between. She has the intelligence to be able to guard her get, but not to guard herself against people who would take advantage of her. So now, Dvar Torah, Shota Miskareshes, Do Yadas Lishma Gita. After all, on a Daraisa level, she's able to hold on to her get. Therefore, the divorce would be effective Daraisa. It would fit the criteria that Dvei Rabbi Yanai and Dvei Rabbi Shmuel are saying. But and the Chachamim said, though, that you shouldn't divorce her so that people don't treat her hefker. Tosfos, by the way, gets into a long discussion over here about what about if she's a shoita and a katana? Can her father accept the get on her behalf, and that would be good enough? Or do we have to have actually that she herself has the capability of receiving her get? So Tosfos has a long discussion about that. Among other things, Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that there's an issue of grira. Now, what does grira mean? So one thing is, Tosfos says that grira may mean that she's nigra, that she easily follows other people, which is basically the same thing we're saying in the Gemara over here, that any adas, lishma satsma, that she's very easily seduced or persuaded or whatever into znus, because she doesn't know better. So in that case, then it wouldn't matter whether her father, so in that case, maybe the fact that her father is able to accept the get on her behalf might not help, because he can't watch her all the time. She's still going to be easily persuaded by other people. On the other hand, Tosfos goes on to say that another possibility that grira means what we're saying in the Gemara over here, mashalcha v'chozeres, that you send her away and she drags herself right back to the house and doesn't realize that she's been divorced. In that case, then the father can prevent her from going back. So in that case, that might be a valid debt. So this is Tosfos bringing from the Yerushalmi. Now, there is in that connection, by the way, there are different Gersois in the Yerushalmi as well, and Hagoris Hagra brings over here at some length, bringing from various Rishonim that discuss the question, what if the guy did go and divorce her? Is that, they were saying that he's not supposed to, but if he did, is it b'dievet a valid divorce? So yesh omrim, so based on different Gersois in the Yerushalmi, yesh omrim that yesh omrim that no. Now in Shulchan Aruch, so it brings both opinions in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber brings the first opinion that B'dieved, the Derishin are effective. That Amar brings the second possibility that no. And that Amar adds, nowadays, that we have Cherem Derben and Gershim anyway, then there's more reason to say that it wouldn't work, because Cherem Derben and Gershim would say you weren't allowed to divorce her against her will in the first place. And therefore, he would actually still be Chayev in Mizon Yisera and all the other things that a husband is usually Chayev for his wife. What you do have is Rabbeinu Gershom built into his takana. You're not allowed to divorce a woman against her will, and you're also not allowed to have more than one wife. But when you have a case where a guy is stuck like that, and his wife is a shoita or otherwise refusing a get, and you can't give her a get, then you have the famous heter meir rabbonim. If you go and get a heter from 100 rabbonim in 3 different countries, then he can override the first cherem Rabbeinu Gershom and marry another wife. So you can't divorce this one, but at least he's able to get married. So you hear every so often of that kind of thing nowadays as well. So we're saying either she has to be a shoita or she has to be that she's refusing a get. Omer Abaya Dekanami. So Abaya says, you see this distinction actually between whether she's able to, between different kinds of shoitim, the kind who's able to at least guard her get, where she can be divorced on a daraisa level versus the one that not. We see that, and we see also on the other hand, when it comes to the husband, where we don't make such a distinction, either way, a shoita can't divorce, we see that distinction from the wording of the Mishnah. When it comes to her, the expression is that if she becomes a shoita, he can't divorce her. When it comes to when he's a shoyter, the Mishnah uses the expression he can never divorce her. Now, ma'ishna hocha the kanoni olamis or ma'ishna hasim v'lekatoni olamis. Why, by the husband being a shoyter, does it use the word olamis and by the wife not? Al shemamina hadaraisa hadirabanan. So therefore, obviously, we're talking about a difference. Daraisa hadirabanan. The word olamis means that on daraisa level, there's never any way of him divorcing her. As opposed to the leaving out the word olamis by the wife implies that it's dirabanan, that he's not supposed to divorce her. And again, you have Rishonim who learned that the Evid, if he did divorce her, it would actually work.
That's before Rabbeinu Gershom.
Before Rabbeinu Gershom, again. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Omer Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, Chula, we said that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri had said that, why is there this distinction? Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri had asked, why is it that a Chereshes can be divorced, but a Cheresh cannot give a divorce? And they answered him that there's a difference because a woman can be divorced, Luritzona, Shalom Luritzona, but the man needs Luritzona. So the Amoraim had a question. How do we understand Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri? Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri ish pshitalei v'ishakami ba'yalei. Is it that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri knows for a fact that the man who's a cheresh cannot divorce his wife, but he's asking in that case, why is it that a woman who's a cheresh can be divorced? Shouldn't it be reciprocal? And if he can't divorce as a cheresh, then she can't be divorced as a cheresh. Or is it the other way, man? He knows for a fact that a cheresh can be divorced, and he's wondering, why can't a cheresh give a divorce? So Toshma, we can prove, the Chachamim answer him that there's a difference because so they point out the distinction that a woman can be divorced against her will, but a man needs his rotzen. Evidently, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri was wondering, why can't a cheresh divorce? And the answer is because it needs to be l'ritzono, and a cheresh doesn't have das. But the Gemara says, Adrama, on the contrary, since they tell him, based on Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada's testimony, they say afzu kayotzeba. They say the same way as Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri just told us that a katana can be divorced, the same way a cheshes can be divorced. Shemamina isha come by life. That shows that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri's suffix to begin with was, why is it that a cheshes can be divorced? And the answer is because the same way as a katana can be divorced, even though she doesn't have das, so can a cheshes. Well, then the question is, so what's Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri's question? Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, the divrei kamalu. Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri is saying, I'm asking according to your own shita. Lidi di, as far as I'm concerned, ki heichid di ish loimatzim agarish ish nami lemagarish. As far as I'm concerned, if the man can't give gerushin because it needs his das, then I would say that the cheshes can't be given a get either. But according to you who say that a woman can be divorced, that a cheresh can be divorced, maishna isho, maishna ish. So why are you saying that a cheresh can't give a get? Omrulayan answered him, ene doima usha miskaresh, leisha miskareshes, because there's a difference between the man and the woman, because the man has to do it l'ritzono and the woman not. So Tosfos on the Mishnah pointed out that Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri would still say that the problem is when you first give her the get, she doesn't know what this means because she doesn't have das. So even though afterwards you can show her you're out of this house and you're not returning, nevertheless he would hold that it doesn't work. That's why he's saying that neither a cheresh can give a get, nor a cheresh receive one. The Chachamim answer him that no, the fact that she doesn't know right now that it's not a get is neither here nor there. Eventually she'll understand. As in fact, the next piece of Gemara is going to say, but we'll leave that for tomorrow, Bez Hashem. So the fact that she doesn't understand at this moment doesn't matter. She'll understand soon enough. On the other hand, the husband who gives the get has to do it, Luritzone, right now, and therefore that's the reason for the difference. Say the Chachamim to Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri.
Whereas if it's a katana,
she gets a get.
She might come back after the get. She doesn't really know that she's being divorced.
No, because then Tana, that's the thing. So Tana, you can explain to her to begin with what it means. So
even the girl, she's going to come back to daddy.
Well, look, I mean, to come back to daddy is not the same as coming back to her husband.
Her husband looks like a daddy.
You can explain it to her. I mean, maybe, look, if she's 2 or 3 years old, maybe. But, you know, we're talking about where if she's 2 or 3, she's anyway in Yadas Lishmos Gita. She can't receive her get on her own behalf anyway. If anything, her father would have to receive it on her behalf. That's
and the father would take care of it.
The father would take care of it already. That's what Tosfos was discussing. This whole matter of group.
By 6 or 7, when she's old enough.
She's old enough to, right, which is already old enough to understand that something valuable or something. Yeah. It's called Oinas HaPo'otas. Oinas HaPo'otas. The age of Po'otas, we're there. She's old enough to start understanding that there were that with an eye in it. So, yeah. So, so then already you can divorce her because then she'll understand what it's all about.
With the head to Nisuina, you said you have to have it in three countries.
So yeah, there has to be that the 100 rabbanim of three different countries.
If it's just in Israel, you can't just have 100 rabbis in Israel.
As far as I know, the takana of Rabbeinu Gershom is that if you're going to have a heter meir rabbanim, it has to be rabbanim from three different countries. Mistama, the original idea was to make it a high bar to clear. You know, especially travel being what it was in those times, you're not going to that easily be able to travel to three different countries to get these heterim.
Is it a big deal today? You have to have actually 100 signatures.
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
You can have one WhatsApp group now.
Yeah.
I know what's
yeah. I think you have to have actual signatures on paper.
I'm saying dig it down.
All right. Thank you for coming out, everyone.